This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM channel 371.
So, my man, busy weekend, traveling all over the place.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Got to see Florida State and NC State on Saturday, and then Notre Dame shoot the lights out Sunday night against Miami, and then got back in time to watch Florida State do it again last night, put the vice grips on Louisville in the second half, and by the way, set the table for the top three buys, at least as we know it, in the ACC tournament. Florida State, Duke, and Louisville all now qualify for the double bye. Won't play until Thursday.
Well, that's no surprise. What was really impressive, though, last night was Florida State in the second half. I mean, goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Energy in the building, intensity,
yep.
Down double digits, Louisville shooting lights out in the first half.
Physical ball game.
Physical, right?
Yep.
And, you know, Malik Williams, we hope he's going to be okay for Louisville.
Boy, no kidding.
That was a big loss. However, Louisville was up 11 without him in the second half, but with about 17 minutes to go in the game. 16 minutes to go in the game. From that point forward, Florida State gave you a display for 16 minutes of, hey, we're not only the best team in the league, we might be the best team in the country. That was an incredible 16 minutes of defense. I mean, Louisville, Wes, they could do zip. All they could do is accept a 20-foot jump shot and then get back on defense.
Well,
it was impressive.
The other thing, and you're right, in terms of the showcase, Florida State gave you all they had. They showed you all the warheads, if you will. They showed you the perimeter scoring. They showed you the ability to get in transition. They showed you, wing to post plays in the half court, right? But really what they showed you was defense.
Yes, sir.
The calling card, and I came away Saturday with feeling this way too. The calling card for Leonard Hamilton, as much as we talk about the, you know, a few years ago when they went to playing 11 and 12 guys a game, the athleticism, multi-position guys, which is very similar to Duke. The one thing that hasn't changed is defense. And Saturday in Raleigh, they put the vice lock on them. And last night, they put the vice lock on them. I mean, they sequestered them, for lack of a better term. I mean, they did not let Louisville get started, Pack, in the half court.
Louisville is an incredibly talented team.
Offensively especially.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
And it got to the point in the second half, Wes, making a pass, forget making a shot, making a pass was somewhat of an achievement. I mean, it looked like Florida State had eight guys on the floor. I mean, they were fantastic defensively last night. You know, they're down 11 with just under 17 minutes to go in the game. From that point forward, 16 minutes and 49 seconds to go, they're down 51-40.
Right.
Crowd gets going. The Noles get going. From that point forward to the end of the game, they outscored a really, really good Louisville team, 42-16.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was dominant.
It was really dominant. Do we have this at the end now? Well, that's pretty good right there by my man.
Patrick Williams.
Delivery by Patrick Williams. But do we have the Trent Forrest dunk on this reel?
Oh, Lordy.
By the way, FSU's Twitter. Oh, here it is. Look at this. That's Jordan Wara, and that's goodnight. Oh,
the bench went bonkers.
The bench?
Yeah.
The building.
Look at the bench. Just look at the bench. If we get a shot of the bench at any point in time on this poster, just watch the Florida State bench. They lose it.
Look at the Florida State bench. He goes the other way right at them, too. Oof. Oh, my God.
That was nasty.
There was a dunk in this league, 40 years ago-ish.
Florida State bench.
Yeah. That never made it because the game wasn't televised when Gene Banks dunked it on Ralph Sampson. Now, Jordan Wara is not Ralph Sampson, but Gene Banks dunked it on Sampson by shoving it between both his arms, between his shoulder and his neck at U-Haul. That was close last night. Jordan Wara can get off the ground now, and Trent Forrest buried that thing on him.
So what do we make of Louisville now? I mean, yes.
Oh, look, here's the thing. When the top three play each other, they're the top three.
Right. I mean, but no disrespect to Virginia.
No, no.
It was the solid four.
And none intended.
Right.
But when the top three play each other, I don't think we can write somebody down and say, okay, Louisville got beat last night and they blew the big lead, so five. No, that's not the deal.
No.
I think Louisville's capable. I still think Louisville's capable of going to Greensboro and winning.
Louisville went to Duke and won.
Correct.
Florida State went to Duke and lost.
Exactly.
Florida State has kind of thumped Louisville twice. I mean, they beat them double digits the first go around when they shot 55% on the road. And that effort last night, that was as good as 16 minutes of basketball as you'd want to watch a team play. They were so in tune with each other on the defensive side. It was really, it was kind of a work of art, quite frankly, what they did defensively.
And I think you bring up an interesting point, and here's kind of where we should start focusing the last 10 days to 2 weeks of the regular season. We need to focus on the Virginia-Duke game and the Virginia-Louisville game.
Well,
because those games right there kind of qualify how we're going to look at those top three or four going to Greensboro.
But keep in mind now, Virginia-Louisville, the first go-around, the game in Louisville was fantastic. Virginia,
sure.
That's the game Virginia's, you know, cracked 70, had the lead late.
Right.
And then Louisville played great.
They did.
The last 3 or 4 minutes to close the game and win it. Now, Virginia, like you said, is going to be front and center with both Louisville and Duke. But we really haven't had, as goofy as it sounds, we're late February, by the way. By the way, Billy Packer. Happy birthday. I digress. So we've gotten to the point now, Wes, that we really haven't seen Duke sample size being humongous, right? They lost at home to Louisville.
Right.
Which was a great game.
Mm-hmm.
They win in the 48-hour turnaround game with Florida State, where both teams had 48 hours to get ready. And I thought Duke grinded that one out. I kind of almost wish they had more time to get a day or two of rest because those two teams are too good. But nevertheless, you get credit for the W.
Sure.
But that's really the sample size for Duke, right? I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
We haven't seen him play Virginia, one against the other two big boys, and that's it. So really, Duke's sample size amongst the elite in the conference is to be determined in some respects.
Mm-hmm. Well.
And they still may be the best team for all we know.
I think you've got a really good, lengthy dinner discussion on how you put these teams in order.
I'm with you. That's why yesterday I did a West Durham special, and I couldn't differentiate them yesterday in accounting. Couldn't do it. I can today if you want my top three.
I don't really.
I'm not
after
to.
Hearing you did A, B, and C.
No, I didn't give you A, B, C. I just went one.
I want to hear from Devin Vassell, who talked to Allison Williams last night after the ball game about the energy inside the Tucker Center.
Probably the loudest it's ever been. I mean, it was crazy. The atmosphere in here was crazy. I mean, when Trent had dunked the ball, it sounded like the roof was going to come off. It was crazy. I mean, I just got to give credit to everybody. It was just a great game for all of us.
22 in a row in that joint. Man, they don't lose at home. They don't lose at home.
Can we officially tell you, America, Florida State has a basketball program now?
Huh.
I mean, what else does Leonard Hamilton have to do? Seriously. You tell everybody they've been really good, you know, and we start these conversations. We start the conversation next year, by the way. We're not going to make this mistake next October.
Well,
they're a basketball program.
Well, we know that. I mean, I think ACC basketball fans know it.
Right.
Nationally, perhaps not, because the Florida State reputation in football, all it would take is one trip to the Final Four. That'd eliminate that.
I agree.
I mean, it's the same nonsense you heard regarding Gonzaga for years and years and years. Oh, Mark Few, yeah, they don't play anybody, and yeah, they win their league, and they've done this. They won 25 games, they win 30. But when are they going to do something? Well, you know, when he knocked the door down the Final Four, you don't ever have that conversation
right
anymore amongst people that really know what's going on.
By the way, real quick, the top three seeds. Now, it doesn't mean this will be the order they finish, but three of the four double byes in Greensboro have been taken care of now, and no surprise, you know, you got Florida State, Duke, and Louisville. Virginia has the inside track, obviously, on the fourth.
But as you mentioned, Duke and Louisville are still on the Virginia calendar.
They are. So we'll get a little bit more, and ironically, it involves the Cavaliers in this, which keeps hope alive for the four teams tied at five. But there is, by the way, Florida State has never won the regular season. They've won the tournament title. Duke, of course, you know, it's been 2010, and Louisville, of course, has not won the regular season since joining the ACC.
And for our SiriusXM listeners,
right,
Duke's at 84%, at least with a share, 62% outright. Florida State, with the big win last night, at least a share at 52%, outright's 33%.
Right.
And Louisville took a hit last night, needless to say, because the Noles have now swept the Cardinals, but 14% for Louisville getting at least a share in 53% outright.
So, I'm still learning my BPI. Does the outright figure at 62% favoring Duke over Florida State and Louisville being third that they think Florida State's final three is the most difficult? Is that the way the BPI would kind of sort all that?
Don't look at me when you ask that question.
Why?
Because I have no idea. I have no idea.
That must be something that the producers help
It's like the KenPom luck list and the BPI. I just don't know. I don't know how that
works. Drew Brooks has just confirmed in my ear, one of our esteemed producers, that it, based on which team's luckier, that's the way they come to it.
Well, we addressed that yesterday for sure. Louisville, very unlucky last night in the last 17 minutes of that game. That is a really good team that looked ordinary. That's how good Florida State was last night.
Yeah.
Don't sleep on the Cards. I'm just telling you. But they need to get Malik Williams healthy. The Cardinals, without him in the lineup, that's a different bird a little bit now.
Well, I got to tell you now, the first half, when they went to him on the bench, it looked like he was in tears.
In a boot.
And then in the second half, at least he walked off the floor in the boot.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to write that off as somewhat of a positive.
Precautionary at best.
Right? So let's hope that that's not a long-term scenario. It carries them a couple of weeks, and let's hope it's maybe a game or so. Louisville, by the way, has only two of these jokers left.
That's why last night was a big deal.
Yeah, well, they've only got two left. They're 14-4 with a home game with Virginia Tech and the regular season finale at Virginia.
And, you know, when MJ Walker got hurt last night, which was a bizarre, crazy, he's running down the floor, refs in front of him. Next thing you know, it looks like, it looked like his Achilles snapped.
Yeah.
He's holding on to the ref, and the ref didn't know what was going on. When he went down, I'm like, man, he's gone. That just looked like one of those yikes, right? And then, shoot, next thing you know, 5 minutes later, he's running around playing great defense, doing his thing. I cannot emphasize enough how impressive Florida State was that last 16, 17 minutes. Leonard Hamilton's going to put that tape on, and he's not going to say a word. He's going to sit back with a big smile on his face because his kids responded because Louisville brought it, and they're up 11, and they're fighting. Yep. And in that crowd and that team, that defensive effort was spectacular last night.
And really, for all the things, as we said at the top, for all the things they do and all the things you hear about the depth and the athleticism, as we said a moment ago, the idea that the core value of defense has changed, nope. Because they've shown it to you. Saturday in Raleigh and now Monday night. And my guess is it'll be there when they go to Clemson and go to Notre Dame, which, by the way, is going to be a very interesting game given the way the Irish are playing.
Well, the game at Clemson is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, as Duke and Louisville, how much fun that was.
Right.
LL.
Yeah. Clemson's in the – and by the way, this 4-team tie at fifth.
The 8-8, the beginning of the glob.
Yeah. Top of the glob is really, really interesting.
Glob's going to get some work tonight.
Oh, man.
Because – the leader of the pack is going to be a discussion point between now and 10 a.m. this morning. I'm just telling you. This is I gotta tell you, Wes, for an NC State fan base today getting out of bed.
Yes, I know.
This is like the worst nightmare kind of game.
Uh-huh.
You're supposed to win.
Yeah.
Right? You're fighting for your NCAA life.
Yes.
The team you're playing has just been roadkill. Oh, for February.
But
they own you. I mean, they have just flat-out owned NC State. They've only won, 31 of the last 35 against you? Last time they won a game was when they went to your house and wore you out. So this is – if you're an NC State fan today, this is just a nightmare game because if you win it, people are going to go, oh, hey, you beat the worst team in the league. Congratulations. You know what? You're supposed to. If you lose it – this is one of those that bothers your NCAA world. This one does. So something's got to get
in
that
chapel. Wait, hold on. Hold on. They lose this game tonight in Chapel Hill.
Get swept by North
Carolina. It won't be about the NCAA tournament.
Oh, I know. That's what I'm saying.
It'll be about getting up and walking to your driveway to pick up the proverbial paper with your neighbor across the street.
If anybody still gets those, yeah.
Well, you know what I mean. That's where this one is.
This is the water cooler problem.
Yeah, this is going in the office.
Hey, man.
What happened to your boys last night?
That's this one is.
That's exactly
right. This is, if you're the red and white today, this is one of those you go, of course North Carolina's 0 for February.
Right.
Of course we've got to go there and play. And of course we've worked our tails off to get on the good side
right.
of Gilinardi's bubble.
Right. And now.
Now you've got to win this game.
We got to go there.
And light blues do, right? I mean, we've talked about the luck factor. Light blue is due.
Yeah.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
It is Billy Packer's birthday. He is 80 years young today.
Happy birthday, Billy.
And Barb has her birthday on Sunday.
Yours is right there around the corner, March 10th, during
March
the tournament.
March 10th is my imaginary birthday.
Is that your imaginary birthday?
Apparently. It's all over the internet, March 10th. So we're looking forward to celebrating that.
We're going to have a cake for you in Greensboro.
38, turn 38.
We're going to have a cake in Greensboro for your birthday.
I think that'd be spectacular. Outstanding.
Yeah.
We're going to talk some BC ladies hoops.
Coach Mike will be with us. Talk about a group making a move.
I tell you what, Duke last night knocked off NC State.
Yep.
Right? And the Wolfpack, again, Westmore's crowd coming down the stretch just did not get it done, quite frankly. But Duke wins last night in the play for K game, which was spectacular. We talked about that a lot yesterday. But Duke's been hot. BC's been hot. And, of course, Louisville, the team to catch, and they're in great shape right now on the ladies' side.
Right.
But we'll get to that coming up in about 15 minutes.
Yeah. Coach Michael joined us from Chestnut Hill coming up bottom of the hour. Lauren Brownlow in the 8 o'clock hour on the stress and strain of the Heels and Pack tonight. And then Luke Hancock and Kiara Fletcher from Nell Fortner's Georgia Tech team.
The Techs played themselves into the dance.
Yeah. And we're going to be at the women's tournament next Friday morning.
That's what I understand.
Yeah.
You know what that means?
What's that?
That means Thursday night, I'm going to have to stop by Lexington Barbecue on the way up. What that means. Sorry, Doc.
Sorry, Doc. You going to stop and get you a chop on the way up?
I'm going to get a chop and a sandwich and then a couple something-somethings because there's a little space between...
Wax paper pie.
There's a little space between Lexington and by the time you get to Greensboro that you got to eat something on the way up there.
Plus, they've got us headquartered, you know, downtown, so you got to make your way into downtown.
Oh, it's even further, so I'm going to have an extra
two
sandwich.
Two wax paper pies.
Yes,
you're going to get apple for both, you think?
Of course. Yeah, one for each hand. I'll drive
peach,
with my
maybe an apple. Do peach and apple,
no,
just for fun.
Apple times two.
Will that be sweet tea you'll have?
Without a doubt.
Okay.
That's an extra limit. All right, tonight, more hoops up and above what's going to happen in Chapel Hill. Where would you like to start, by the way?
I think Clemson, Georgia Tech is fascinating tonight in Atlanta.
You know, and they both have given you signs of life, right?
Yep.
Georgia Tech's won their last three home games. Clemson's won their last three.
Yeah.
How about the little 69% shooting against BC in your life, Wes Durham? You're not going to lose many games shooting 69%
in
this day.
No, nor should you.
Yeah. But Clemson's got their act together, man.
Yeah,
they're
Clemson
playing good
does
hits.
Have their act together. And the Tigers, if you look at the four teams tied for fifth, Clemson is one of the more intriguing looks here.
You could make the case they're playing better than any of the 8-8s.
Yes. This the other day was, you know.
They missed a grand total of 14 shots.
Yeah. By the way, my man Hemingway still getting some run, too. Looks like his mom drops him off at the game, and he goes and scores and gets back in the wagon and drives home.
They're just playing with a lot of confidence, man.
And Hunter Tyson came in, did some good things. Look at that. A little flush off the baseline. Here's the curious part about where Clemson is. At Georgia Tech, in fact, two Georgia Techs in the last four.
It's hard to believe. Here we are on Billy's birthday. This is the first time they've met this year.
Right. So I'm going to offer this to you. If you're one of the 8-8s this morning, it really may be about how many you have left and how do you think you can do. If I told you Clemson's going to go 3-1 in their last four,
depends.
You'd say, ooh.
Wait. Well, but it depends who the three are.
I understand that.
Because see that team in the very front?
They're
Florida
in the
State?
Next game.
They're one. Right. If you're telling me that's one of the three, they will have had wins against the big three.
I know. I'm just telling you they're going to go three. You've got to look at the four here. And I was doing this last night. NC State has Carolina, Duke on the road, Pitt and Wake at home. Okay? Notre Dame has BC and Wake on the road, Florida State, Virginia Tech at home. Syracuse is at Pitt, at BC, at Miami, only Carolina at home.
Syracuse has no shot.
Okay.
They're going to have to win the tournament because they have zero wins. Well, they beat Virginia, so that helps.
Okay, but Clemson is Georgia Tech twice, at Virginia Tech, and Florida State at home. I'm saying 3-1. I don't see any 4-0s among any of those.
I don't either.
Okay, so now all of a sudden, if I told you, sound like a 30 for 30, if I told you Clemson goes 3-1, would you think they'd be the potential favorite?
If one of them includes beating Florida State, I do.
What if they don't beat Florida State? Just the other three.
I think you're going to have the glob personified.
Look, we're going to have somewhere in this deal three teams for a slot. At least three.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Well, again, it depends who wins the big games.
We're going to have somebody, one position. Remember in the ACC?
Notre Dame has zero wins versus ranked teams. Zero.
Right.
And when you look down the rest of their schedule, Florida State's the only opportunity.
Right.
Is that going to be enough if they run and have a deep run in the ACC tournament? Do you think that gets them in? I think they're going to have to win a bunch in the ACC tournament.
Yeah, I've always felt like if they played Wednesday, they would have to win two.
I don't know, Wes. I think you got to win more.
Okay.
I mean, NC State right now is barely hanging on.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
With their
last
resume.
Last four in, according to Joe.
Right. I mean, if you believe, if Lenardi is the gospel, they're hanging by a thread.
Sure.
And if they lose tonight, I bet they're not hanging by a thread.
No, they lose tonight, they'll be on the backside.
So, I mean, there's just, you know, we could sit here and speculate like we are nonstop.
Right.
It's going to play itself out. It's the easiest way to figure the thing out,
right,
man. We could tell you 3-1, they could go 1-3, and just doesn't matter.
Well, for those historians, of which we are ones.
At times.
1995, there were four teams that finished tied for first at 12-4.
Damn, that's 100 years ago.
I understand that.
Doesn't mean anything.
But when we say three somewhere tied for one slot, it's happened more than you think it has in the past. So
you know why none of that matters?
Why is that?
Because the league's averaged, what, 7.5 teams?
That's
in
correct.
The last 6 or 7 years.
But the year that
we're not going to get but four, maybe five.
Pack, the year that you had four teams tied for first, those are the only four that went.
That's all we're getting. So, I mean, I just don't think this league's going to produce seven teams in the tournament. I don't think it's going to produce six.
2015, there were three teams tied at 8-10.
It's different. I just think every year is totally different. And you got the 20 conference games, the lay of the land outside the ACC footprint's different. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything's different.
Yeah.
You know, the Big Ten's going to put in 10 or 11 this year. Doesn't mean they're going to put 10 or 11 next year. It means they could put in five next year.
2018, we had four teams tied for third.
No, the glob's going to be beautiful by the time we get to Greensboro.
Right.
But in terms of NCAA tournament teams, to be realistic, I think Virginia's a lock, in my opinion. And NC State's got the best chance to make it five. But they've got to figure out a way not to butcher this thing coming down the stretch.
Well, we'll go back to what we said. Dan Bonner identified this. He gets full credit from me. At least the ACC was void, for the most part, of great non-conference wins. How costly is that going to be on Selection Sunday? I don't know. We don't know the math on 20, but I'll tell you this. Somebody may go to Greensboro and have to win two, perhaps three, as you say, in order to squeeze the door and get on the list. We'll see how it plays out.
Here's the other thing. We can give you all the what-ifs on this.
Right.
You still don't know what happens in the other conference tournaments. It doesn't take but one or two guys to show up with the same attitude and the same problems as this league has right now.
Right.
And go on a run and win four games, win their conference tournament, and get the automatic bid to knock somebody out.
Yeah. And by the way, for those of you that asked, there it is.
Do you know how?
In Raleigh on Saturday. Did you bring that card with you? There's the new one. Updated last night late. Right there, kids. Look at that.
Multicolor.
Huh?
Isn't that beautiful? Picasso-esque.
Easy to read, easy to organize, as long as I don't have to do a lot of heavy lifting on the math.
We're counting.
Yeah.
Do you know how many AP top 10 teams have L's this year as a top 10 team? Would you like to guess what that number is?
I think I heard you say this on the air yesterday. 50-some?
57.
Wow.
5-7.
Okay. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Tons of guests. We got games still to get into. Gave you a little dose of Florida State Louisville last night. Duke's ladies team knocked off NC State in Raleigh. There's some hot teams right now on the ladies side of the ledger. I mean, hot.
Well,
teams.
You said this a couple weeks ago. We're going to be in Greensboro next Friday. There's absolutely no telling what may happen in the ACC Women's Championship at the Coliseum. I mean, absolutely. I mean, you have an idea, certainly, that Louisville's had a great year. NC State's had moments as well. But now everybody's having moments. And one of the bigger moments belongs to Boston College. And Joanna McNamee, the head coach of the Eagles, joins us. Coach Mack makes her debut with Packer and Durham. First of all, good morning. Thanks for the time. And congratulations on the run here.
Thanks, and good morning, and happy birthday.
That's Billy.
Yeah, my dad turns 80 today, yeah, Coach. Yeah, so we'll pass those good well wishes along.
Oh, it's your dad.
Yeah, I'm not 80 yet, but even though I look it.
I didn't know it was 80.
You know what it is? It's my wife's got that West Virginia blood, so.
No, just kidding. Come on, why you want to do that?
Well, because, Coach, we're just talking about West Virginia.
Weird, yeah, but, I mean, you know, you look 80.
I know, I feel like I'm 103. Oh, my God.
Anyway.
All right, Coach, let's get into it. What has been the catalyst? We've got two or three teams in the league right now that are on fire. And, again, I know Louisville's doing their thing, but you know, Georgia Tech's kind of played themselves into it. Duke's been red hot.
Yeah.
And your club, too. So what's been the catalyst on this red hot stretch coming down the pike here the last couple of weeks?
I think for us, it's really our team chemistry. We talk about it all the time. You want to gel at the right times, but what it takes is a really selfless team that each of them, and I know this cliche is used a lot, but they don't really care who gets the credit. We have, I think, four people averaging double figures, and everybody just moves the ball, and they share the ball well. And again, they know that it takes a lot of hard work, and they're pretty selfless, and they don't get, you know, none of them have very high egos, and I think that's a big thing for us.
But this is kind of, in many ways, I was thinking about your team the other day, especially after the Miami win. You've got here you are in year two, right? I mean, this is a significant turnaround from kind of the program you inherited. So how much of this was your expectation for this season, and how much of it is transitioned through the course of this season?
It's probably a lot of transition through the course of this season. Now, my expectations are always super unrealistic, so I'm not going to say I didn't expect to have a great season, because I did. But then when it happens, it's really exciting. So it's nice when you're a coach and you get to have a bunch of joy in your season, because, you know, for us, those losses always hurt so much more than the wins feel good. But when there are some unexpected wins, those always feel great. So this has been a really fun year.
Coach, I want to go back a little bit here. The one against Notre Dame, the last play. Now, you know, you just talked about, hey, I got a bunch of great kids. Nobody's looking for any credit, no ego. Break this down for me. How often has that play worked in practice, the one that beat Notre Dame? Because I got a funny feeling you're going to tell me it never works.
No, it's funny. We either throw the pass away or we miss the shot, but we end up having to do 5-on-0 at the end of it just so we can feel success with it. And so when we called it up, they kind of knew what we were doing. But, you know, I love the fact that Emma Guy, she looked really tuned in. And I said, you were really focused in that timeout. She said, no, I was thinking, oh, my gosh, you're going to me for this last shot? So and that's the kind of players they are. They're funny. And they actually really are funny. And sometimes today I think that our generation and their generation don't always connect on the humor. But this group is really fun to be around. So they make me laugh all the time, keep me young.
You mentioned the scoring balance, and I think that has something to do with it as well, right? I mean, the fact that you can kind of share the ball and everybody gets a little bit of the credit, but I'm more fascinated at the core values of this team and just the continuity you've shown here in the last five to win these games and what it means going forward. You know, we have this conversation every once in a while about teams becoming programs. To me, this team is helping you build the program.
They really are, and I think they really want to set the foundation. I know we have our three seniors that we just honored at senior night, and they take a lot of pride in that. They want to be the change, and they want to be the starting blocks of our foundation. And so they talk about that. And then, you know, Taylor Soule is just a sophomore, but she's that consummate leader, just with her not so much lead by telling people what to do, but more her actions and just her positive mentality every day. So it's good to see, like I tell them, it's nice to see the good guys find success.
And she's good enough to be the ACC Player of the Week, too, so that's got to make you feel pretty good about where she is.
It does. I love seeing that for her, and anybody that's ever gotten to know her knows her. Just you root so hard for a player like her.
Coach, I know we're coming down the last week here in terms of the regular season, but the ACC's got six teams now that have won double digits in conference play, BC being one of them, and Georgia Tech, a lot of folks believe, have kind of played themselves into the tournament. Again, I know there's still work to be done. Big picture, how often do you have that conversation with your kids that, hey, listen, Louisville's still the team to beat in the league, but we're playing well. But big picture, NCAA tournament-wise, how often do you have that call with your kids?
We don't ever have that talk with our kids. We literally talk about the next game and how life is going and how hard we have to work. And we keep it really simple. So we don't get too much in the standings. I know they do on their own, but as a staff and what we talk about together, we're really next play, next game kind of mentality.
Has that changed for you? I mean, is that approach or that philosophy always been that way? Because it seems with today's young people, and I'm not saying one generation or one decade's better than the other, it just seems that part has kind of evolved to they'll figure it out on their own. They know what the stakes are. They'll find out on their phone or from their friends or whatever the case may be, as opposed to a coach standing up in front of a room and saying, hey, by the way, this is X and this is Y if we don't win.
Right. I definitely, they're so connected and, you know, they're the type of, kids like, oh, I think they all are. They're watching everything on their phones. They know exactly, like, I guarantee you they were all tuned in, to the NC State Duke game last night. Like, they understand what's at stake, so there's no reason to bring it up. And for me, I don't want to put any pressure on them like that. For me, the pressure is just to really play all out every possession, and that's the pressure I put on them.
Well, speaking of your next game, let's concentrate on that then. A road trip to Louisville. Do you walk into that environment in terms of, hey, we've got nothing to lose, let's go play and have fun? Or is this a total litmus test of, hey, listen, this is the best team in the league, let's find out just how good we are?
No, it's actually the first, probably, of what you said. I walk into it in, you know, because I know that our team right now, I can tell they're probably going to start to put a little pressure on themselves. So for me, I think it's really important to point out what you just said. There really isn't any pressure on us in this game. We need to enjoy the atmosphere, enjoy their crowd, and just play hard. And at the end of the day, I always tell them in the locker room, if we go all out and play smart and play hard each possession, we should be pretty happy with ourselves.
All right, this journey you've been on, and I was talking about it going to the break. Your first head coaching job was in the late 90s at West Virginia Wesleyan, and then you go to Pikeville, and then Albany, and now Boston College. This passion and movement you've had in your journey, I'm fascinated by what each stop has brought you that now maybe you're seeing the payoff at Boston College.
Yeah, I think about that sometimes myself. I think everywhere I've been, and even as an assistant coach, you bring a little piece of all the programs that you've been a part of, both in growth, good and bad, and you kind of just, that molds who you are. And for me, even last season molded more of who I am and what I am as a coach. And I think your players really mold you too. So I tell this team all the time, I don't think I've had more fun just being around a group of young women that, like I said, they're truly funny. Mm-hmm. They're that group that if I was their age and playing basketball, I think they'd be my best friends. And believe me, as a coach, I don't treat them like my best friends, but they could definitely be, they're just really relatable and they're fun to be around. And I think that, you know, that's what I want our building blocks to be here at Boston College, a great culture. And they've bought in and they've been fun. I think our whole staff would agree. And I have a great coaching staff. And that's something that I've learned along the way too, is when you're building a program, it really does start with, the coaches that you put together.
Coach, I've always thought of the community at Chestnut Hill, BC, being kind of a unique, not only educational experience, but everybody kind of knows everybody. You mentioned about how friendly everybody is on your team. How often do you rub elbows with Jim Christian and the guys? Because I got to figure everybody sees everybody, and everybody's kind of going through the same highs and lows and through an ACC basketball season.
We absolutely do, and actually Jim and his family live in the same town that we live in, so their son plays in the same, like, St. Joe's League that my son plays in. So they're good people, and I think it's across the board. Boston College, that's one of their foundations, is they build on good people. And, you know, I think Pat Summitt says it best, you know, you win with people at the end of the day. And I love the people at Boston College and in Chestnut Hill area. They all bleed maroon and gold, which is awesome.
All right, so what's it like for Luke and Caden during the year? Because I know your two boys like to play. They're around the program from time to time. So what's it like when mom's trying to win 20 and getting all this thing set up for the postseason run?
Well, luckily, the hero in our family is my husband, Joe.
Yeah.
So he does, he keeps everything afloat and actually allows me to spend these long days doing film, hanging out in the office, or even in the nighttime when I have to do what I need to do. He kind of takes all that guilt away from maybe the time I really want to spend with Luke and Caden. And likewise, the time I do get to spend with them, I don't have to, like, do a bunch of extra work. It gets to be solid one-on-one time with them. So I can't thank my husband enough. But Luke and Caden love it. They love Boston. There's so many great things for them to do here. And they also like the fact that our team is winning, because if you think that there's harsh critics out there for anything, believe me, they're my harshest critics. I'll come home and they'll say, why did you do this? Why did this happen? So they watch very intently. And, you know, they were as emotional on senior night as anybody else. It really, they love our team too. So it's great.
That's cool. That's very cool. Well, continued success. You're doing a great job. You really are.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Packer and Durham.
There's crispy, and then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Chester and Fuller, Robert Donato. It's all you need to know about the basement.
And Ralph Sampson's jersey's here.
Yeah.
Getting toward tournament time, had to draw a big Ralph out.
We got a pretty good collection. I'll tell you what, if North Carolina wins tonight, I'll bring out your 35 tomorrow and stick it right there. How about that?
Maybe we ought to take these for the tournament in Greensboro. Just take what we got.
No.
No?
No. We're going to keep them right here
keep
in the
right here. Yeah. By the way, we got stuff in the mail yesterday.
That's what you told me.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about that.
We're going to unpack it.
Must have been delivered to your house.
It was delivered to the corporate facility.
Oh.
Been retrieved.
It didn't come here to the home.
No. We're keeping some of the. It has to be submerged in water. some of the stuff has to be submerged in water.
Especially the ones that are ticking.
Yeah. The ones, sometimes they come addressed to you at the corporate office and we have to submerge them in water.
That's my wife's biggest fear after doing all this stuff for so long. People would just show up at our house, ring the doorbell.
I'm sure they would.
And it scares her half to death. Well, I'm like, they're not going to hurt you. Just let the people in. Feed them.
All right. Kyle Guy needs our help. Well, actually, he doesn't need my help. I can tell him just off the top of my head. But I think this question really was geared for you. Did you see this on Twitter?
I did not.
All right. Kyle Guy needs to know, what's the best food for big, active dogs?
Oh, that's easy. That's easy.
Don't say beef noodles with red wine sauce.
No. That's okay, Fuller. Good. That's Fuller's.
Yeah, that does not go well.
There's two things that dogs love. What a cool dog. I haven't seen this.
Oh, he's got two dogs, just like you.
Yeah.
Great.
All right, Kyle, listen to him up, man. I got the answer for you. That's a sweet dog right there. Now, you tell me that hound right there wouldn't fit in the basement with Chester and Fuller.
Well, maybe we can get Kyle to come by and bring the dogs.
That dog right there is a killer.
Yeah.
Man. All right, it's real easy. The bigger the dog, the bigger the steak. That's how it goes. The bigger the dog, the bigger the steak. The smaller dog, like that cute little black and white one, peanut butter. Every dog I know loves peanut butter. So steak, peanut butter, good to go. In moderation, of course. Just don't just sling the ribeye down there and say, go get them, Fido. No. Small pieces. Just a few. It'll be good to go. Right, Chester? Look at him.
Big Chester. Man. Chester hears us talking, and all of a sudden he hops up on the green room chair.
That's it. So a little steak.
That's it? What about the beef noodles with red wine sauce?
I told you.
What about pasta salad? What about all these other things that the big machine over there eats or whatever?
The dog pasta salad.
What about some of the lethal things the dog eats over there?
I give him some noodles. They like noodles. But those are my dogs. I can tell with Kyle's dogs.
What about bologna? Don't you feed them like bologna and stuff too?
Bologna's not bad.
Yeah.
Stay away from the salami. Go bologna. Turkey's good. They love turkey.
Chicken parm.
Yeah, Robert says chicken parm.
Chicken parm's good too.
Chicken parm. Yeah. See, now we're talking about some of the lethal things.
Always bread. I mean, if you got a good roll, snap in half, roll for the hounds.
What about barbecue?
No, that's mine.
That's yours.
No, the barbecue. They get no barbecue. No.
That's all you got is peanut butter and
you ask
steak.
Me a question. If you don't like the answer, don't ask me the question.
Well, no, because then you roll through, like before the show comes on every once in a while, pack or roll through all these things the dogs have eaten in the last 24 hours. Right. And none of that is peanut butter or a little bit of steak.
Well, you got to break it up a little bit. I mean, you wouldn't want to eat peanut butter and
what
steak.
What about shellfish?
Every day.
I get shellfish.
I don't eat shellfish. I don't eat seafood.
Don't so get in the sea and don't eat seafood.
I don't eat seafood.
So they don't get it thus.
I mean, we had the surprise birthday party for Billy and Barb
right.
a week or so ago.
Yeah.
And our man Wallace, he's our bud.
Uh-huh.
He was our personal chef.
So the dogs ate some of Wallace's?
No. This wasn't here. It was at Billy and Barb's.
Oh, okay.
But so he went surf and turf. I didn't touch the lobster. I didn't touch it.
Anything?
You could have put that in the back of my Ford F-150. I wouldn't touch it.
Anything else?
I just gave you the answer. For Kyle Guy, start with the basics. A good steak and a little peanut butter. Dogs love it. I love it. If you'll eat it, they'll eat it.
I can't believe we didn't get to the beef noodles and red wine sauce.
I told you, that is a Fuller special.
That's what we're talking about.
But I'm not,
that's a large, active dog right there.
That dog needs to break in a little slowly. You just
Fuller's oh, you just can't go 0 to 50 on the beef noodles and red wine sauce?
Stay away from Chinese food and Mexican. Do not give the dog Mexican food.
Don't give the dog beef noodles and red wine sauce either.
Well, Fuller likes it. He likes hanging out with you and telling you about it. He expresses his love and joy to you every time he has it.
In so many ways.
Makes your eyes water. It's so good.
Yes, he does. All right. Did you see what happened over the weekend in the NHL?
Yes. It's a crazy story.
David Ayers, who is the E-Bug, the emergency backup goalie in Toronto. He is the emergency backup goalie for both teams. So if the team's empty out of the goalie position for one reason or another, he would then be plugged in. Well, the Hurricanes lost two players, the goalies. By the way, both to injury. And Ayers had to come in and essentially save the game as the E-Bug, the emergency backup goalie. Think about this now. What's the one? This guy drove the Zamboni for like the minor league team, the Marlies of Toronto. Comes over, he's the emergency backup goalie at 40 plus years of age. What is the one thing you think you could do in a bailout for somebody in a moment's notice? What's the one thing outside of hit 7 out of 10 or 5 out of 10 at the free throw line?
Make a 3-foot putt.
Make a 3-foot putt. After 22 years of absentia in golf, you could go make a 3-foot putt.
Yeah.
Okay.
I could do that. I'd probably get it up and down. Short game was always pretty good.
Okay. In an emergency notice, if you know somebody – let's hypothetically plug this in. If all of a sudden you're at the Senior Open and – you know, you got to get up and
I am down. 80, so I can qualify.
You could be with Angel Cabrera.
I am Angel Cabrera.
Well, let's say for fun then. Angel Cabrera gets hurt, and you got to finish the last two holes.
I tell you what, if Angel Cabrera got hurt and I'd walk up to the 17th tee, they would not ask me for ID.
No, but
I'd walk right up there.
Well, let's
Angel,
move.
Angel.
Could you
go
bogey? Could
yes.
you go par bogey in the last two to protect a 3-shot lead?
Like, I get the call like in the next 3 minutes to go to the tee? No, I could not go par bogey. No, not hitting a shot in 22 years.
No, but you told me last winter or whatever you went to the Top Golf here in Charlotte, took about six swings and you found the oil again.
But I was feathering 7 irons. You're not asking me to go to the tee and finish a hole. I could get you up and down. I couldn't get you home.
So if you're 60 yards out and Angel Cabrera can't go anymore. 60 yards out.
60 might be asking. I'm talking about a short game like, hey, I'm on the fringe. Let's get it up and down. I'm not talking about a 60-yard shot's not easy, even for guys who've been playing.
Okay, so we're on the collar. Where are
on
we?
On the collar. I can get you up and down.
In the fringe?
Yeah, I can get you up
and down. Well, we're really narrowing the field here.
Well, you asked again, you haven't liked my answers today. So you
in a tournament
me.
Event.
I don't care if there's 100,000 people screaming my name or hoping I hit 8-putt.
You could do it.
In fact, I like it when people get more boisterous and crazy. I'd fit right in out there in Phoenix. All those golfers, back off because a camera snaps from four holes away. That's nonsense, man. Just hit the damn ball. Just hit it.
You'd like playing golf today. Most guys like music and all that stuff.
Whatever.
I know you could do it.
Just hit the shot.
I think you could do it from 60 yards.
It's like the luck nonsense. You know what?
Just, I think you could. Either I think make you could hit 5 free throws out of 10. You could hit 5 out of 10 free throws.
Sure.
Okay. We may do that in Greensboro, by the way.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.